Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week I bring you exciting new guests to talk about various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. And as you know, there is a lot to talk about in this field. I hope you enjoyed last week's show. Our guest was, let me see, I have it written down here, Robert Boval, and we talked about the Egypt Code, which was actually really interesting. He's a leading Egyptologist and a specialist in ancient archaeology, and he has some very compelling theories about how the monuments of Egypt were built and why, and just a fascinating, fascinating gentleman. So if you didn't get a chance to catch that show, all the shows, again, are on archives on the BBS website, so check it out if you get a chance. Tonight, we're going to take it into a little bit of a different direction. I know some of you are expecting to listen to Matthew James and talk about meditation and Huna. Unfortunately, he had to reschedule, but I've got another guest who I think you're really going to enjoy. He's got a lot of very interesting things to say. His name is Roy Doughty, that's D-O-U-G-H-T-Y, and the title of tonight's show, I'm calling it A Monument of Wonders, which is actually Roy Doughty has his own radio show, so I'm really honored that he's agreed to take some time off to visit our little show here. So A Monument of Wonders, what is it? Well, we'll get more into that in the show, but basically, this is going to be a show about consciousness and awareness and the evolution of consciousness and awareness. And we're going to explore various aspects of this, and I think you'll be really amazed at what our guest has to say. Our guest, Roy Doughty, is actually a longtime practitioner of Kriya Yoga and has been trained as a neuro-linguistic programmer. Has also worked as a business consultant. And all of these things came together to give him a realization that outward change could only be manifested by inner change. And these culminated in the creation of various awareness exercises, which led to the creation of A Monument of Wonders, which is a radio show, as I mentioned. It's a website. It's many, many other things as well. It's evolving. And that's basically what we're going to be talking about tonight. Roy, I want to thank you so much for coming onto the show, especially at last notice like this.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for asking me, Preston.
So, how did you get into these kinds of subjects? I mean, it's not everyone who explores these things.
You know, I'm not always sure whether I got into them or they got into me. But I'm sure most people who have explored sort of alternate areas of consciousness have that sort of ambiguity inside of them, and maybe as we develop this conversation, we'll even talk about the importance of ambiguity in exploring different realms of consciousness. But for me, I'd always been a poet, and when I got out of college, there wasn't any ads for poets in the newspaper, so I went into business. And it culminated eventually in me having a business consulting practice. And after raising money for people and doing the things that you do in that kind of practice, I really had the realization that no matter what you did in the exterior world, there was no real change unless something happened inside to change people's consciousness. And so I began to think seriously about how to do that, and part of that was through the practice of neuro-linguistic programming, and part of it was through the development of something I called awareness exercises, something that a person could do to focus their mind, to focus their imaginations, to focus their feelings in a way that you might use some instrument like a microscope or a telescope to extend your sensory boundaries.
Right, right. You know, I'm so excited to talk with you, actually, because I'm very, very interested in awareness and consciousness and always have been, but especially since Well, years ago in 1984, my mother died, and I was a very closed-minded kind of guy, very logical, left-brained, and thought I knew everything. Then I saw her ghost, and I didn't believe it. I thought I was hallucinating, but it started to open me up a little bit, and it really changed my awareness and my consciousness when I started paying attention to my dreams, and then I started having lucid dreams and out-of-body experiences, and this opened me up to just a whole bunch of psychic experiences. So that's when I started asking everyone I knew, well, do you think we're in the highest state of awareness that we have? And most everyone said, yeah, this is as aware as we can get, which I totally disagree.
Right.
But yeah, I'm really excited to talk with you tonight. Now you say neuro-linguistic programming and awareness exercises. What is that?
Well, neuro-linguistic programming started out as a sort of psychotherapy that was developed from studying psychotherapists who got results that nobody else was getting. And what they were really doing is they were actually noticing how people use their brain to create certain states, either a resourceful state or a neurotic state or something like that. And they found very quick techniques to change people and to communicate with them, and also to create something called peak performances. And so I became interested in that because I wanted to change people. And like you, I also sort of went through a crisis in my life where a lot of my life imploded all at the same time in terms of a marriage, in terms of a job, many things. And I began to follow my dreams very closely and write a poem about dreams. I'd followed my dreams before, but I sort of had an analytical approach to interpreting them.
Right. So,
and when I did this series of poems, everything in my outer world changed, and I also had these precognitive experiences, which I had in a dream diary, so it wasn't just the deja vu that people have, thinking, well, I think I've been here before, I think I've met this person before, but I could go back and actually look in my dream diary and see the exact event. And so I began to really notice at that point that our typical conceptions of time and space, there was something wrong with it. There was something limited about it. And so when I did the, as you've discovered, right?
Right, right.
And so when I did the awareness exercises, I was raising money for people, and the same kind of thing happened. I thought, you know, I'm successful in doing what I'm doing for people, but I'm not successful in actually changing their lives. So I created a number of awareness exercises, and most of them were just imaginative things that people could do. And there were several of them. And one of them, the one that I eventually began to work with myself, was taking several objects that were almost identical. In this case, they were beach pebbles. And I laid out seven of those for each day of the week, and each day I would take one of those objects out, and I would meditate on it, and I would begin to keep a diary of it. And within 2 or 3 weeks, I realized that this thing was growing way, way beyond my own consciousness, and it evolved. Each day of the week then took on a persona. It took on a certain time, a period in time, historical time, or in the future. And I began creating this monument of wonders, which is a monument of words that is something about the intersection of time, consciousness, and language. And I began to become aware of, because I was writing about historical periods, and you talked earlier about, I guess you had last week about the Egyptian period.
Right.
One of the periods that I write about is in 4th century Greece. And like most people, you know, what do I know about 4th century Greece? But I began to have visions of historical events. And then later, from reading about things, I began to understand that there were those visions were true, that I was actually seeing something. And that also then began to tell me, reinforce this feeling that I had inside in the, with experience, like the dream work that I'd done earlier, that there's something about time and space that is impregnated, you could call it with information, but the way I like to refer to it is there's sort of a pulsating grid, and in which our and sometimes I refer to it in A Monument of Wonders as the psi code. That we can enter, and in that place of consciousness, we literally can go to any place in the universe and find out whatever we want to find, or more than find out, actually experience it.
Wow.
And so a monument of wonders is really a way to work with language, and now it's it'll have a particular form when it's finished, but a way to work with language in which people can sort of enter that realm of experience. And they can do that imaginatively, and my suspicion is that every leap in consciousness has involved a lot of mythologizing, dreaming, far-out experiences. They could be paranormal experiences, experiences with UFOs, something that crosses this boundary that we usually consider to be the normal. And my own feeling is, and my own experience is, that whenever we sort of approach this boundary, things get very weird.
Huh.
And you described it as seeing the ghost of your mother. I'm sure when that happened, right, it was outside of the bounds of anything that you might normally be able to accept as reality.
Right.
And my feeling is that is a condition of this expansion of consciousness. The first time you experience it, it seems weird. So very often, and you probably had people on your show that mainstream media would not touch with a 20-foot pole, right? Because they would just think they're crazy. But nevertheless, just because you can't, mainstream consciousness can't see stars in the daytime, doesn't mean the stars aren't there. And when we begin to enter these different realms of consciousness, we begin to have these experiences, which can be really unsettling to our normal everyday experience.
Right. Well, there does seem to be an evolution of consciousness in terms of humanity over the ages. I mean, if you just look at, say, like we used to think we were the center of the universe, and now we're pretty sure we're not, at least in terms of astronomically speaking. And you know, when it comes to UFOs, just for another example, no one ever really considered outer space and aliens until the turn of the century in the 1900s. It was pretty much not in the public consciousness at all. Now everyone, of course, knows what UFOs are and whether they believe in it or not. So, but my question is, do you think that, you know, we're at some sort of a turning point of awareness? I mean, it seems to be there's a lot of people waking up to these, to a new awareness or a greater awareness than we've had, which involves a lot of this psychic stuff.
Right. Yes, I do. I think there are a lot of calendrical prophecies from different traditions,
right.
The most famous being the Mayan tradition, that point to 2012 as sort of cosmogenesis point, in which a sort of new era of consciousness will be born on Earth, will begin to be manifested.
Is that what you think 2012 is then? Like, because I mean,
yes,
there's so
I
much
do.
Talk about that.
There's a lot of talk about it, and you don't have to be sort of an esotericist in order to have the experience. Almost everybody is now having this experience of a quickening. I was just listening to the news tonight, and one of the political pundits said something like, well, the news cycles are much faster now. Big events are happening so quickly.
Wow.
And so we're sort of all on this giant wave of really kind of earth-shaking events, ecological events in terms of like tsunamis, earthquakes, hurricanes, political events, economic events. There's clearly something that's starting to break this, what I would just call the shell of the outer world, which might also be called consensus of reality. And I was very interested in what you said about the experience of your mother. Very often, whatever has been growing under there has been hidden in the unconscious. And it's almost like what every culture sort of accepts certain premises for being alive and reject others.
Right.
I'll give you an example. A historical example of that is the Middle Ages lived a sort of, there was an interior focus. There sort of was a rejection of the sensory world or the luxury of the senses, I might say. There was a sort of an adherence to a very rigid social order. And when the Renaissance came, a lot of those things were just reversed. so we found people sort of reveling in the senses with, you know, exotic fabrics and beautiful buildings. We began to challenge sort of that hierarchical social order. But I think we're coming to, in 2012, a much bigger change in consciousness than that. We're at the end of a 26,000-year astronomical cycle, and there seems to be something that's not only happening on Earth in terms of global warming, but the whole solar system is heating up as the Earth moves through a section of space that's much more energetic. It has much more stuff in it. And we're coming into a line with the Mayans saw, and what most of us are feeling in some way or another, however we interpret it, is this all this stuff that we've sort of rejected and denied from our consciousness is now getting to be manifest. And it's getting to be manifest in things like the experience that you had with your mother, crop circles, crystal skull prophecies, clairvoyance, spoon bending. You know, there's lots of phenomena out like that.
Well, it's almost like the pendulum has swung all the way from materialism, and now it's going back into the other direction towards spirituality.
And I think
the new age of enlightenment, or we're having another age of enlightenment, right?
Yeah, I'd almost go so far as to say that it isn't just a pendulum swing. It's like a complete sort of alteration of the whole idea of the back and forth and change to something that's blossoming that is utterly new, that hasn't really occurred on Earth at least before. Although we've seen seeds of it in different cultures, the Egyptian culture, maybe as far back as Atlantis, if people can historically go back that far. And people have, just as now, they have glimmers of it in their life. Things that they see sort of out of the corner of their eyes, residues of dreams, experiences right. Like you're explaining. They know it's there at some level, but they can't define it very clearly. And I'll include myself in that. And all of my work is about, which is going back to sort of what I said earlier, is about this idea of ambiguity. We really want clarity, but the universe seems not to like it as much.
We can't put everything into little boxes, huh?
We do like things to be clear, and we want it to be this and not that. But we know from quantum mechanics and everything that somehow or another, all of this stuff is entangled. And
right.
So... one of the things that I discovered in working with the Monument of Wonders is sort of the character of time. The universe seems to have what I would call entity-like characteristics. It seems not to just act like mechanical processes, but more the way entities or personal people interact with one another. There seems to be something that we would call love or desire or aspiration. There's something in the universe like that. And some people, we've given that the name of God, or we've given it the name of spirit, but there's something that we feel inside of us and in the universe as a whole that we can relate to. And that kind of structure of universal consciousness can never be completely defined. Any married person will know the truth of this statement. You can be living with someone for years and years, but there will be whole areas of their experience that you won't know. And that's true of our sort of relationship with the universe, and it's even true of our relationships with ourselves. One of the things that sort of shocked me about working on the Monument of Wonders is those things inside my own consciousness that sort of get exfoliated in a way in the work that just are totally surprising. It's just... I didn't know I knew. I didn't know that was there.
Right.
So I don't think that's like a foreign experience for people, but the other sort of strange thing that happens, this sort of feeling of weirdness, is also the whole concept of synchronicity or serendipity. This
well,
idea
I
that...
I was going to bring that up, yeah.
Right. Well, go ahead.
Well, it's just I was just thinking about that when you said that, you know, we have a relationship with the universe, and I was thinking, well, that would explain coincidences and sort of these lucky events where it feels like the universe is, you know, reacting to you or speaking with you, almost.
Right.
If you know what I mean. And I mean, when these things happen to me, I just get a thrill. And I feel like, well, I'm on the right track.
Because, right. I always say to myself, I feel like I'm shaking hands with God.
And I guess in a sense you really are, you know?
Yeah, it's something on the inside, something in the inside of your consciousness that sort of then is reflected back at you on the outside. And so that's when we experience these synchronicities. Or suddenly discovery of a resource that comes to us, or a person that has just the information or the skill that we need.
Right.
I've had that experience. Yes, go ahead.
You mentioned precognition earlier, which is something I'm really, really interested in, because, you know, I never had that. I had one incident, actually, growing up as a child, where I knew all the answers to a game show. It was really bizarre.
That's pretty profound.
We thought it was funny. We didn't really think much of it. But I always remembered it. And then years later, I started having these experiences where dreams would come true, which you mentioned. And
right.
Just the oddest experience to walk into a room and suddenly watch your dream play out before you. And it made me realize that reality is very much a dream. I don't know how else to describe it. And
yeah.
I was just wondering, how do you explain precognition? I mean, what is time if we can jump forward into it, or into the past for that matter?
Well, for one thing, I think it's multidimensional, and that we actually, in every moment of time, my experience of it is there are similar parallel moments. And the physicists are sort of grasping at this now with quantum theory. It's really easy for people to grasp the idea that space is everywhere all at once. If we're visiting Detroit and we leave Detroit, no one thinks Detroit disappeared. But when we experience a moment in time, there's some feeling that somehow or another that time is past, or as we go into a moment of time, there's some feeling that that time did not exist until we entered it. And there's some truth in that in terms of the observer and the observed are linked together. But my experience with time and working with the Monument of Wonders and having precognitive dreams is that it's far weirder than we can suppose. And that there's something like, it's almost as if our consciousness were like a projector that is playing with many, many possibilities as it does in a dream. And it throws forth sort of channels of light out in various directions. And however we choose, or as chosen before, we get caught in these tractor beams and we begin to experience that particular sequence time as our particular reality. When we have these sort of paranormal experiences or dream experiences or precognitive or synchronistic experiences, it's almost like the adjoining tunnel of time. There's something that in our emotional experience becomes intense enough, or our desire becomes clear enough or intense enough that those two walls separating those two channels of time become translucent, and we can actually see and experience other dimensions of ourselves. It's difficult to talk about, and even stranger to experience, but I think something like that is actually happening as consciousness is unfolding on this planet with human beings.
Right. Well, I think that's a great explanation. I mean, when you have an out-of-body experience, it's pretty clear that, you know, you can traverse these long distances in just a second or less.
Right.
And what we think of as time and space is, at least in terms of materialistic science, is way off.
Now, yeah.
You mentioned psychometry as well, which I think is fascinating. And that's the ability to, gather information by holding an object?
By holding or studying or meditating on an object. You know, that's how a Monument of Wonders was born, by actually studying certain objects, in this case stones. And there's something, we know that the universe has a holistic nature. And so that is, as sort of bizarre as it seems to ordinary consciousness, that all of time and space exists in any time, any particular time and space. In a sense, every object in the universe is both the history and the destiny of the universe. And as we begin to sort of take on an intense meditation of any object or anything or any event, as we do that and we enter into the inner experience of that, the universe begins to unfold. And we get taken on this journey that is just beyond imagining. It's something that can be experienced as we're doing it. And I think the arts are much better at dealing with this than the sciences. The sciences generally study the effects of consciousness, and the arts study the sort of practitioners of consciousness. And so a few years ago, I did work with Fritjof Capra, who wrote the Tao of Physics, and he was doing really good work in bringing ecological awareness, the connectedness of all things, into public schools. But I used to tell him, I said, physicists and scientists are just now discovering what has been well known by artists and mystics for thousands of years. And so I think one of the shifts in consciousness that we're going to experience is in this new age that's rushing toward us, is a much, you mentioned a sort of spiritual life as opposed to just a religious life, a creative life as opposed to sort of an engineered life.
Right.
And there'll be sort of a different kind of valuation of things. We're seeing a meltdown in our economic system right now, and there's all kinds of talk about why that's happening. But in truth, you know, in any economic system, which is about the distribution of goods and services, that basically delivers a lot of ills and disservices and impoverishes billions of people on Earth and destroys the Earth, there's something wrong in the valuation system. And I think it's consciousness upwelling and asking us and demanding of us that we need a different sort of valuation system of what is important in life. And with that change will become a change in identity of who we sort of define ourselves to be as human beings.
Right, right. So this is why you're doing this really important work. I mean, is that the purpose of a Monument of Wonders, to guess, enlighten
it
people?
It is. And you know, whenever, and I'm sure you found this out because you're doing this radio program, and at some point before you weren't doing it, and now you're doing it, and probably about a subject that some years ago would have been completely strange to you.
Right.
Consciousness is arising, this sort of transformation of consciousness is arising in each one of us. It's arising in you, it's arising in me. And depending on sort of our usefulness to this sort of entity like nature of consciousness to unfold itself, we're given some task to do. And it could be a small task or it could be a big task. But it begins to sort of grow in us the way a tree grows in soil. And so I'm very surprised at what I'm doing, and I can't really think about the size of it and the dimensions of it. So I just try to think about, well, what are you going to do today? How are you going to express it today? And I just try to do that. And I notice that there's some shaping power behind all this that is doing that. Certainly I'm conscious when I'm doing the work, but most of the work is done by that sort of shaping power, I think.
Right. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Bennett, and our guest tonight is Roy Doughty. That's D-O-U-G-H-T-Y. And we're talking about the Monument of Wonders, which is actually a really amazing project. You have a website as well, right?
I have a website. www.amonumentofwonders.com, and people can go on and they can sort of get the verbiage on what's the point of the Monument of Wonders, what it's about, what its structure is. But they can also go, there's a page on it called Text and Broadcast, because there are, I think, 35 or 36 hour long radio broadcasts that are both readings from the Monument of Wonders, and commentary about it. And so, because one of the things I realized, for every person who could read what I'm doing and get something out of it, there were 100 or 200 people who could listen. And they're sort of just like any incantatory, a mantra or something else, there's something about the human voice that carries a consciousness vibration that's transformative. And so A Monument of Wonders is kind of, it's a literary project, and yet it moves beyond, or I hope it moves beyond, what we generally conceive of as what literature is. We have this thing in our culture where we've taken spirituality and made it into a religion, and we've taken the arts and made it into entertainment, and we've taken healing and made it into medicine. But this change in consciousness, and in all traditional cultures that I know, those three are never separate. Huh. And so one of the things that A Monument of Wonders, the attempt is to bring those three things back together so that people can experience those three things as one thing.
Well, I really, really love the name Monument of Wonders, and I'm interested in how you came to choose the word monument, which I think is actually fits perfectly what you're doing.
Well, you know, that came, I'd been working on the monument for a number of years, actually, without actually knowing what to call it. And what I began to be aware of as a subject matter that I was dealing with, I came across something from an Australian archaeologist, whose name escaped me right now, I think, but he called it monstrous visual symbols. And he said, every civilization creates a monument or a monstrous visual symbol that sort of is an explanation to itself and to the future about what it was about. The Egyptian pyramids were something like that.
Right.
The pyramids in Central America are that. We have the Great Wall of China. You could say that the World Trade Towers was something like that for us. So when they came down, it was much more than just losing a building. It was losing a huge piece of sort of our global identity. So, and then in addition to sort of these sort of building monuments, there are monuments of words. The Bible would be one, the Quran would be one, the Torah, the Upanishads, the Pali Canon, there are a few. And so as I began to work on this, I realized I was creating a monument of words. And I also created that we have this belief in our culture in progress. So we use something for a little while, and then it becomes obsolete, and we throw it into a trash pile. And the biggest monument that Western culture is building are dumps. And the largest structure on the Eastern Seaboard is the Staten Isle Fresh Kills Landfill. It's 600 feet tall. It's taller than anything on the Eastern Seaboard. You can see it from space. It has more material in it than the Great Wall of China and the Great Pyramid. And it's a history of who we are. But it's not, and so the Monument of Wonders, as I began to build it, I realized that I was trying to make sense out of all this sort of junk in consciousness, rejected ideas, the feminine, which in our culture has been suppressed for thousands of years, alternate states of consciousness, which I'm sure listeners to your program are aware of. We have all these experiences, but because the culture at large doesn't see it in this myth of progress, we stuff them down, and we create this dump inside of ourselves that needs to be transformed before this 2012 flowering of consciousness occurs. And so, in a large sense, any alternate, which is why I kind of alternate state of consciousness, for most people, it goes into the dump immediately. They don't do what you did. They don't sort of have the ghost experience and start a program and begin to explore it. What they mostly do is say, it didn't happen, it must have been indigestion.
Why do you suppose that is? People are so resistant to sometimes.
You know, that's a very good question, Preston. I think it's because event horizon of a new area of consciousness, when we're still locked in the old area of consciousness, we fear for our sanity. and we certainly fear for our connections in the world. We don't want to be thought of as being weird or out of place or strange. I mean, in a way, because we are social beings, our lives and our survival depend upon us adopting most of the myths and beliefs of the people that we're with. And people who are pioneers and shamans and people who are doing radio programs, you're sort of on the leading edge of an experience that is definitely not mainstream yet. So I think, you know, that's the fear, that you're going into new territory. And my experience is that it's something maybe not to be afraid of, but it certainly changes your life. And you will be different as you explore these things than you were before. And you may not fit in with the same group of people that you fit in with before.
Well, it's my personal opinion that, you know, this sort of having your awareness evolve is sort of inevitable. And eventually we're all going to become, I guess, you know, enlightened, whatever that means, at least to some degree. Right?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's true. And I would just use myself as an example. Is this is not a ride that I would have consciously chosen to be on. And yet there's something in the universe that is pulling us all along this trajectory and creating more from what's been there before, but also just completely new things.
I find this all fascinating because this is actually a strong theme in UFO contact as well. I mean, when ETs take someone on board a craft, the number one thing that happens to most people is they're examined physically,
mm-hmm.
at least according to the reports that are coming in. The second most common thing is they're given messages about, you know, upcoming changes in consciousness and that the world is going to be a very, very different place in the future, and that the way we think about the universe is going to be very different. And I think, you know, you're right on the cusp there of, you know, what this change is.
Yeah, I don't really know what that would look like. I have inklings. And, you know, that UFO experience is, it's happened, I don't know, you know more about this than I do, but I know that it's been an experience of thousands, maybe even millions of people at this point. I don't know how many. You can tell me maybe the answer to that question. How many people have experienced a UFO experience?
I think it's millions. Definitely
I think
millions.
You're probably right. So, isn't it strange that here we have an experience that is truly amazing and kind of bizarre that's happened to millions of people, and yet it's not part of mainstream conversation at all?
No.
Yeah, I think, and when it's brought up, it's, I think most people would still put it in the category of the bizarre or the unreal or the crazy.
Right.
And it's a point that I actually would like to kind of make for the listeners is that when you first cross this sort of ordinary bounded self, whatever self you have as a result of your conditioning, your social conditioning, your parental conditioning, your first experience of that before you sort of get acclimated, it's weird. It's very strange. It's alien. And so you have to, if a listener wants to do an awareness exercise or pursue any of these things, you need to prepare yourself for the fact that when you cross this boundary, you're going to see things that are stranger than anything that you've encountered before. And it's going to rearrange things inside of you in a fundamental way. And so this ability to sort of accept the weirdness is kind of a criteria for going further, I think.
Well, I have high hopes for humanity. You know, it's funny, when I was in college, I took a lot of philosophy courses, and there was one course where the teacher, you know, did a class on mind-body separation. And he asked us all, you know, if we believed in it or not. Are you a materialist or a dualist? And, you know, there was only two people in the class who were materialists, and I was one of them.
Oh, interesting.
I think I was wrong. But most people apparently do believe in mind-body separation and the existence of, you know, the spirit world.
Uh-huh.
So I think despite people being resistant to these ideas, I think in their hearts they know it's true.
I think that's true. And I think the reason it's true is that people have had some experience that has told them it's true. It may be not an experience they would talk about to other people, but it's children, I think, often cross these boundaries fairly frequently. And any time when we sort of take our attention off the exterior world, what it's like to make a living or doing anything like that, and we begin to just notice what's going on in our own consciousness and follow any one of those lines, we're going to quickly see that the body isn't the whole game in town. It's more like an eddy in a stream than it is like a separate object. And one of the experiences that I've had at the Monument of Wonders, the mystic and yogi Paramahansa Yogananda used to say, "I wake up some mornings and I don't know which body my consciousness is occupying." His sense of identity was so strong with other people. And a Monument of Wonders, it has hundreds of characters, and very often my consciousness just enters into other beings, the characters in the work, so to speak, in such a way that I become them. And I think that's an experience that more and more people are going to have as sort of the normal condition of being a human being, that their consciousness is not just confined to their own body and their own particular time and place, that we actually have this capacity to be able to explore other beings in an experiential way, first as in an imaginative way, but in an experiential way.
Well, certainly I've had a lot of dreams than other people, and dreams of past lives. And, you know, Tom Sawyer, not the literary character, but a gentleman, he had a near-death experience, and a book was written about his experiences. And he said after he had this near-death experience, his psychic awareness exploded. It grew amazingly to such a degree that he could actually do exactly what you said, go into other people's bodies and experience their lives as being them,
right?
On a right there live basis. So
it's such a profound thing. A couple of years ago, I went to India and I went through a process called a Oneness University, and the people there were just amazing. They could, you know, they could put you in all kinds of strange states of consciousness, and it's a worldwide music movement now in which people from all religious faiths, from the Pope's secretary to politicians like Bill Clinton, to have had some contact with this thing. Another thing that you'd never hear about on the mainstream media. And I was there with a group of shamans from all over the world by some strange synchronicity, because I'm not one of those people. And I went to breakfast at this little thing, and I was sitting there with a man that I'd never met before, who was a shaman from Zimbabwe. And I'd never met him before, and he immediately began to tell me about a dream that I had just awakened from.
Oh.
And I thought to myself, well, he's just not another guy in the diner. You know, he has some experience of consciousness that's outside the realm of what most people have. And he has it as a real experience. I mean, I was totally blown away. I have a hard time remembering my dreams, let alone having another person remember my dreams. So,
I've had shared dreams, so I kind of have had a taste of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, so we get into things like remote viewing. We get into things like the spontaneous generation of objects, and, of course, things we've talked about before, which are these incredible synchronicities that happened to people. One of the great things about writing the Monument of Wonders is just the number of synchronicities that I wrote a lot about the crystal skulls, the prophecies of the crystal skulls. And then the most famous crystal skull, then I met the woman who actually owned the crystal skull and got to spend some time with it. And those were any things that I like sort of sought out, but it's what I would call is there's sort of a vibrational affinity between your consciousness and the rest of the universe. And when you're vibrating at a certain level, then whatever is also vibrating at that level manifests for you.
Well,
so they could be money.
you mentioned the crystal skull. I have this thing with the crystal skulls. I mean, which skull did I was able to visit Joanne Parks.
Joanne Parks. I'd written all about her, and you know, I actually used her name. And I asked her when I met her. I said, "Can I use your name?" Because it's sort of a fictionalized version of her life. She said, "Sure." That's the one I met, Max.
Oh, really? How interesting.
Yeah. That's
another
great.
Weird coincidence there. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And
yeah.
They're amazing. Now, would you say our perception of the universe then is kind of dependent on our consciousness?
Oh, absolutely. I would even say more than that, it's not only that our perception of the universe is dependent on our consciousness, but the universe itself is dependent upon consciousness. And so as we sort of evolve, the universe evolves too. And these experiences that we're seeing as weird, at some point we'll assimilate those well enough that we can actually negotiate them. A shaman can do things with their consciousness. We might have the experience, but it would disorient us. But eventually it will be like an acquired skill. It will get better and better at doing it, and then something else will be at the boundary of consciousness that will seem weird and disorienting and things like that. So with UFO experiences, we may begin to be able to have that experience with whatever those beings are in a way that's more useful to us and more useful to them and more common in a way.
Well, it's interesting, you know. Again, to bring back the idea of near-death experiences, one of the things that really intrigues me most about them is the near-death review. And I've interviewed many people about this and, of course, read a great deal. But what's so interesting about it is when people have this near-death review, they experience not only the events in their lives as reliving them, but how they've affected other people. And they actually say that they feel the emotions and the feelings that they have caused other people to have. So the idea of all of us being one seems to be the case. I mean,
yeah,
reality.
I think it's literally the truth. When I was in India, I had this experience of one of the sort of mantras they say is they say, your thoughts are not your thoughts. And so that's a patently absurd statement. But I had this experience of sort of experiencing the river of human consciousness, this like an immense river, and which included anger and fear and joy and desire and all that sort of thing. That's just the humanness. And it's this, I met several people who had near-death experiences as well. And when I was a child, I had pneumonia and asthma and went into that sort of apnea state lots of times. And it's, at first it seems like a blank state, and then it becomes something that unfolds. But one of the great things about meeting, I used to go to this meeting of several people who have had the experience, and they would meet together, and they would start their conversations with the phrase that you never hear in normal conversations, and that would be with the phrase, "Since I died." And I always thought, usually nothing follows that, nor for most people. But for those people, they had a story that followed "Since I died," and it's a story that's really important for us to hear now, I think.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I mean, not only did they physically die, their identity and the way they thought of themselves died as well.
Right. They usually have much less fear about life, and that's my experience with them. A lot more confidence in life, a lot more confidence in the universe. I haven't met one yet who's afraid of death.
Right. I'm afraid of dying. I think that the whole process is a little nerve-wracking, but at the afterlife, I'm just entranced with. I think I've been there, so I know it's an amazing place.
Right. Well, I think most people are, that's the transition that bothers them. And we've all experienced that transition when we were born. I often used to tell my consulting clients, you know, being in the womb is not bad and being outside the womb is not bad, but that little 4-inch passageway in between is pretty tough. And so I think the same thing happens when you're dying, when you're giving up the body. The spirit is so fierce and holding on to the body.
Right. So let me see if I got this correct. The monument of a Monument of Wonders is sort of a project to help people awaken to the idea that it's a holographic universe and that one, the entire universe is sort of folded within one object or can be perceived within one object and you
that would be sort of one way to describe it, I think, yeah. Typically a literary work appears in a book, which I still think is one of the most amazing technological achievements of human beings, is language in books. But the internet and internet radio has given me the opportunity to create something that's fluid and organic. And so I have the opportunity of listening to people like you and sort of hearing things and going back and changing things so that the monument is not something that just sort of gets published and it's done. It's something that can continue to grow and evolve and change. And so I have a collaborators page on the Monument of Wonders where I invite people with different skills and different creativity and different insights to share those with me and so that they can be incorporated in the monument. So, like all monuments.
I bet it's having a huge effect on, you know, people's awareness and consciousness.
Well, I hope so. I've spent a lot of time sort of working on the writing of it, and it's been out there as a radio program now since for about 10 months. And so that audience continues to grow. And, I'm getting calls like yours today more often and finding out to my delight that I'm not alone in this project. There are people like Preston Dennett and other people who are pushing this boundary, breaking out of this sort of shell of consensus reality that we've been both building and being enclosed by for quite a long time now.
Right. So, what do you think enlightenment is? I mean, what are we heading towards? How is our awareness going to change? That's kind of a loaded question, I know.
It's a big question. When I went to India, they said there are 6.3 billion people or 6.7 billion people on the planet, and there are 6.7 billion different ways to become enlightened. What I can say is this, that we've all had the experience of either love, or we might be out in nature, or we might be creating something where, you know, we have an intense absorption about it. And what happens physiologically is that energy goes up from the reptilian brain, the parietal lobes, which situate us sort of in time and space and create this sensation of separateness, and the energy goes into the frontal lobes. And at that point, we sort of freely interact with sort of the whole fractalized nature of the universe. And so we've all had that experience a little bit in some way. And my experience, especially after going to India and working on this, is it becomes much more of your common experience. You've got far less of the sort of mind chatter that goes on in many of us. Sensory acuity is much greater. It may even you may be able to see things that go beyond your normal sensory acuity or sense or feel things that would go beyond them. So for me, it's been a process of sort of first the visual world sort of opened up and became sort of, you know, more bright and harmonious. Then it was the auditory world. Then it was the sort of vibrational inner feeling world. When I was around people, I could sort of sense their conditioning, and then something like their personality and something below that would be sort of a vibratory essence. And when you sort of have that experience of people, you can't have that experience of people without feeling love for them and feeling connected to them in some profound way. So it's a very different sort of way of being in the world in which you're constantly defending yourself or you're trying to make yourself more important. It's a great, for me, when I'm in that experience, it's a tremendous enjoyment. It's almost beyond sort of an emotion into just an enjoyment of experience as it is and as it's unfolding.
Right. Well, I think that's what everyone's actually searching for, whether they know it or not.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Well, Roy, we only have a few minutes left, so I want to give you enough time to sort of wrap up the show and tell our listeners what you think they need to know, and you know, list your website again. And
well, I'd like them to visit my website, A Monument of Wonders, and actually, my radio program will be on tomorrow from 11 to noon Pacific time on Seventh Wave Network, and that's seven, like the number seven, Seventh Wave Network. Or they can go to amonumentofwonders.com. Or they can go to, I have two radio programs, one on KEST 1450 AM in San Francisco, but those programs are archived on oneness program.com. And both of those, one's a spiritual program, one's an artistic program, but they both work with this area of sort of the oneness of consciousness. And so I just really appreciate the opportunity to be on, to talk with you, to find sort of another compadre on the path, and to be able to share this with your listeners.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I guess it was meant to be.
I guess so.
Universe works in strange ways, but I'm really, really glad. Really glad you came on, and I want to thank you again. It was a great show.
Thank you.
Well, everyone, that is our show for tonight. You have been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight has been Roy Doughty. That's D-O-U-G-H-T-Y, Roy Doughty. And we've been talking about his project, A Monument of Wonders, which you'll have to visit his website, which is of the same name, A Monument of Wonders, all one word, www.amonumentofwonders.com, to get more information about it. But it's all about consciousness, awareness, and what we can do to raise our own and other people's and bring enlightenment to this world. So I want to thank you all for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have, and I hope you can join us next week when I bring on another exciting guest to talk about UFOs and the paranormal. Till then, have a great night and a wonderful week. Bye now.